And hi and welcome to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly program about finance, money and investing on Radio Northern Beaches and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network in Australia. I'm your host, Ray Trevison from OTG Capital. And today we're welcoming to the microphone Scott Duncombe from Sydney Funerals. Scott, this is your first time to the show, so welcome.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Look, as a bit of a precursor so that listeners and viewers get a bit of an idea, can you give the people out there a bit of a background on, you know, who you are and where you've come from and how did you get involved in funerals?
Sure, Ray. I mean, that's the number one question that everybody asks me. How did you get into funerals? So my journey is nearly 12 years ago, a friend of mine said, why don't you become a wedding celebrant? And I was like, oh, maybe I should look into that. I like to speak in front of groups and I like to be able to organize events. And I was in the corporate world and then I just became a celebrant. And then 2 years into becoming a celebrant part-time, I managed to go full-time into the wedding space. And then all of a sudden I got a phone call from a funeral director just randomly out of the blue. We're looking for a male celebrant for a funeral for a person that has passed away. And I was like, oh, damn. I cry at every funeral that I go to, so why would I want to become a funeral celebrant in the funeral space? And so I, you know, did the first funeral and then just something just clicked. And, you know, for me, it's all about ceremony and whether it's a wedding or a funeral, that it is all about the person that has passed, to be able to tell stories, to give a tribute, you know, to pay homage to who they were and what they did and, you know, all the good deeds that they did throughout, you know, their life. And weddings is over here as a celebration of ceremony as well between a couple. And then you've got funerals over here for an individual person. And so I then got into funerals and then started doing more and more and more. I then worked for another company just as a subcontractor, as a funeral director. And then just on 3 years ago now, 3.5 years probably in the making, I then wanted to go out on my own and become my own company. And lucky enough, sydneyfunerals.com was available. And I just purchased that URL and then just launched my business on the 1st of May 3 years ago. So that's sort of in 6 years now I've been a funeral director. I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of funerals and it is the best job in the world, you know, to be able to help a family through that, you know, that channel of grief and to be able to help them deliver a beautiful ceremony, whether it be by the beach, whether it be, you know, at a crematorium, chapel or a cemetery. So that's sort of the quick snapshot of where I came from. But as I said right at the start, it's all about ceremony.
Well, gosh, I've got so many questions after that intro. Let's earmark that one about the beach too, I must say. That's brilliant. So, look, one of the things around Dollars and Making Sense, when I started the show close to 4 years ago, I wanted this to be all about education. And so when somebody dies suddenly, particularly if you're younger, the idea of having to necessarily organise a funeral, particularly if you're an executor of a will, and one of the reasons we're talking to you is that you were referred to me by Jonathan Elcombe from Elgen Estate Services. And so, you know, I guess it's that all that encompassing sphere. But I guess someone's just died and you have to organise the funeral. You know, what's next? So yeah. Scott, if somebody came to you and asked you that question, what's the general answer? What's next?
Yeah, so the first thing I always say to a family member who calls me is just know that there's no rush. Just take a breath, be with family, and then we'll come together over the next 24 to 48 hours once that sort of shock period has sort of passed in terms of if it was an unexpected death. And it just allows them just to be able to, you know, grieve with family and to be able to take on board what's just happened. Unfortunately, the industry in Australia has forced everybody to make quick decisions and quick turnarounds with the large organisations. And, you know, I've always thought, why is there a rush when somebody has passed? You know, why do we need to do it in 2 to 3 days? Why can't we do it in a week's time? Where we can really plan for the celebration, we can really, you know, think about all the details as well. So all I just say to people is let us bring your loved one into care and then that brings a level of comfort to everybody as well. And then we can sit down and start to plan the celebration of life. And I say it's a celebration of life, whether it was unexpected or expected, because we really do need to celebrate someone's life as well. And so, you know, those first couple of days for family and for the community is just really coming to terms with what's just happened. then once they take a breath, then it's time to plan the ceremony and, you know, the funeral service.
I guess, Scott, one of the things that's a curiosity to me, with more and more, I guess, discussion around religiosity and the like, there are some religions, though, that do have fairly defined protocols around how long a corpse remains in state before, you know, the burial rites are done. Do you encounter that a lot, or is that really within defined communities that you don't necessarily come across that?
Yeah, it's definitely in defined communities such as, you know, Muslim and Jewish communities. So they, you know, theirs is all about a quick turnaround of 24 to 48 hours. But they tend to stick with their own community as well, with their own community funeral directors, because they're prepared for that and they know how that works. And it has to happen seamlessly every time. There is just no opportunity to go, well, we can do it on, you know, next Tuesday. Like, it has to happen within 24 to 48 hours. So we've done a few, but, you know, it's more because they're outside of their normal community, or there's a special request for that loved one that's passed, that they didn't want to do that traditional Jewish burial. They wanted to be cremated. So
tell me, you mentioned a corporate imperative just before around time and speed. Can you elaborate on that?
So it's, I guess, for large companies, it is all about a numbers game. So, you know, if we have 100 funerals come in this week, we've got to make sure that we turn them over fairly quickly, because we're going to probably have another 100 come in next week. So that efficiency that they have forced us into making decisions very quickly on the family. And I've seen it firsthand where families just, person has died on Tuesday, funeral on Friday, you know, and it's like, hang on, I haven't even come to grips with the fact that this person has just passed. So they go into this funeral in this massive big, you know, haze and grief and just shock still, and they get to the end of the funeral and then they go, I don't even know what just happened, you know. So then they go into that funeral remorse of, oh, hang on a second, I didn't even have time to think about my speech. I chose a coffin based on, they were the only options given to me. There wasn't the right speakers there, the flowers, why do we choose red roses when that was the only option that I had, you know. So large organizations tend to, it's just a massive volume game. And, you know, they just force everybody to make quick decisions and such. So, but things are changing, which is good.
So are you suggesting then that there's a certain end of the market that's sort of like almost a franchise, dare I say it, fast food type of approach to pushing funerals in and out the door?
Well, as I said, it's a number. So if they've got 100 bodies in their mortuary 1 week, they want to get them out as quickly as possible so that they can take the next 100 the next week. And that's what some of these large organisations have. You know, they are large mortuaries that have lots of bodies in it, you know, because they are the, you know, the big brands that we have in this country. So, and that's the same around the world. Wherever you go, there's always going to be those large players, and they have large mortuaries with the facilities that are you know, state-of-the-art and amazing. But it's, you know, 100 in 1 week, 100 out the next week. It's just otherwise just things back up.
It's a bit of a procession. I, again, when I talked to Jonathan about wills and executors and the like, I speak from recent experience because my own mother passed last year. And I have to say, when we went to the crematorium, it really felt like a procession. You know, they'd sort of rattle you in, you do the biz, and then they rattle you back out again. Yeah. And literally, we were being ushered out the door going, hurry up, we've got another mob coming in 5 minutes.
Absolutely.
And it's like, Jesus, you know, don't let the door smack you on the back of the ass on the way out. Really felt like that. I mean, I get it. But there are sometimes I feel like turning around and going, push me one more time, I'm going to snotch it, because I wasn't feeling, I wasn't at my best that day when we were cremating my mum, I've got to say, and having to deal with the eulogy and all of that. I got to say, my sense of humour wasn't at its finest.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the things that everybody remembers about a, you know, service, that there is another company coming in behind or another family coming in behind. So we always make it a company policy that we always do a double booking, so that there is 2 hours of time, so that the family's not rushed to get in and the family's not rushed to get out at the end. And that means that everyone can just take their breath, take their time. Eulogies can be multiple, you know, speakers as well, because, as you know, in one service, 45 minutes, that's getting in service, getting out as well. And if you've got a slideshow, if you've got, you know, music as well, there's 15 minutes. So you've got like 20 minutes to say goodbye to someone. It's just not right. So But, you know, that's the difference between some companies is they will book two bookings to cover that off. So, and for the extra $200, $250.
Okay, that was my next question. So if you offered that, there's obviously a cost associated with booking the crematorium or the funeral place. So, yeah, thank you for that clarity there, Scott. And I guess from that perspective, I want to talk about a number of things, including things like costs and funeral insurance and the kind of conversations you have. But look, we're just about finished for our first section of today's interview. It's just about time for a break. You're here on Dollars and Making Sense. I'm Ray Trevison. And with me at the microphone, I was just about to say at the funeral, with me at the microphone, we have Scott Duncan from Sydney Funerals. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, and thank you for listening to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly radio program about finance, money, and investing on Radio Northern Beaches and nationally on the Community Radio Network around Australia. The views, comments, and opinions aired during our program should not be construed or viewed as financial advice. Any commentary is general advice only and does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. You should consider whether the advice is suitable for you and your personal circumstances. If in doubt, you should contact an authorised, licensed financial planner. We welcome questions and feedback, and you can get in touch with us via our blog, social media channels, or email. Please search for Dollars and Making Sense in your favourite podcast platform or check out our blog at otgcapital.com.au/blog. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Dollars and Making Sense. I'm your host, Ray Trevison, and at the microphone today we have Scott Duncan from Sydney Funerals, and we are talking about how to organise a funeral and what you've got to do. Now, before we went to the break, Scott, and during our time, we were talking about, you know, someone dying and going through that process and I guess the corporatisation. So let's talk a little bit about cost and funeral insurance. When you come across families that have just unfortunately come into the situation where they do have to bury somebody, how well or how knowledgeable are people in this space around cost? Are they usually insured, for example, and do they get shocked by what they may encounter?
Yeah, it's always, it depends if the person was known that they were going to pass away, so if they were expected or unexpected to pass away. If they're expected to pass away, a lot of families have already planned for this because they know the time is coming. So some people have funeral insurance, some people have funeral bonds, some people have prepaid funerals. And, you know, there's a couple of the products that I just mentioned there that people have paid for years for funeral insurance, you know, and they pay, you know, $200 a month and they've been paying it for the last 10 years. And then come the time for the funeral that they go to cash in and it's only worth $10,000 or, you know, whatever the policy is worth. Funeral prepaid funerals is where you've locked in the price at the time of doing it. And that price is valid for the entirety of that person's existence. So if somebody took it out funeral today and it was $10,000 and they don't use it for another 20, 30 years, the funeral director takes on that cost and the family doesn't have to pay for one cent more in 30 years' time when it's used. And then there's the funeral bonds. Yeah, the funeral bonds is similar. It's a little bit more risky, but we only deal with prepaid funerals because funeral insurance, you know, there's lots of stories out there that we've heard of that, you know, we just don't want to touch that product because it's just, there's a real bitter taste in everyone's mouth around funeral insurance as such. So, you know, so going back to the question about, you know, what do they do and how can they afford it as such? The most important thing is just to do some research. Now, that's easier said than done. Sitting here, clear minds, you know, nobody's passed away that I can actually start doing some research. But when somebody does die, it's very hard to, you know, to filter through what is, you know, cost efficient, the right field, the right company, et cetera. So, you know, it's really important that somebody else may want to step in and do some shopping around for that family that can have that clear conversation, that is taking it on behalf of their family. And then they present, you know, four or five funeral directors to the family and say, look, these are the five different quotes that I've got. And you will find that they vary vastly from, you know, $5,000 to $15,000 for exactly the same service.
Wow. Is cost a real factor, or are people grieving so much that it really, you know, it's like, no, don't, just do it. You know, is it that kind of scenario, or do you, is it just as wide and varied as a normal consumer experience?
Absolutely. You know, people that are in the eastern suburbs, you know, that may want to spend $100,000 on a funeral, it's all relative because they can afford it, you know. And then there are people, you know, that can't afford it and they're just happy to go with the basic direct cremation, which is $2,500. So it's all relative to what that family can afford. Now, some people, you know, I always, you know, question when people go, oh, mum would want that best coffin. Like, why would mum want the best coffin? I'm sure if she was here, she would go, no. You know, like she would want, you know, not to wait, because coffins are the most marked up item in the industry that has been pulled over everybody's eyes for years and years and years. So what our pricing model is, whatever we pay for that coffin is what the family pays for it. So it's a wholesale price. You know, it's $500 for our standard industry coffin. Most other funeral directors, they charge $1,500 plus. So what that
might I add, Scott, for those, and we normally don't mention brands on community radio, but there's a very large place called Costco, and the last place I ever thought to, but they sell coffins. So yep. When you walk in, they have this display, and there are the coffins there. They don't actually show the prices, but, I mean, if somebody came to you and said, look, I've bought a coffin from Costco, you'd happily accept that, I guess?
I'd also tell them that they probably paid, you know, $300 too much for it as well, because Costco, because the supplier that supplies Costco is the supplier that supplies me.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
It's the same coffin. So, you know, you probably pay $800 at Costco and $500 from me. So, the purpose of Costco doing it was, you know, to disrupt, you know, and because they know that pain point in coffins is out there in the marketplace. And, you know, that's so for some funeral directors, that's their model and that's okay. But, you know, I think that should be the least, you know, I don't think a coffin should cost as much as what some of them do. And there are coffins that can cost up to $30,000 that are gold-plated, you know. And for some communities, that is what they want because it's a status. It's a you know, sign of respect for their loved one that's passed away. So,
well, it's fascinating because I come from a Roman Catholic background, and so I'm no longer religious, but I can remember when, as a child, going to some funerals and even my relatives back in Italy, these massive marble edifices that they organise in the cemeteries. So it's a case of not just the coffin, but then the headstone. And I'm just looking at this and I'm just thinking, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. Cynical here, Scott, or is that?
No, look, it's the one thing in this industry is that everybody thinks the funeral directors make, you know, charge the most amount. But you're right, like some of these, you know, mausoleums and, you know, final resting places for some communities, they're costing up to $150,000 plus for these, family vaults and such, where you can fit, you know, 6 to 8 people in there. And they are beautiful marble. They are beautifully built, but they've got to last a long time as well. So, you know, that's just the single cost, you know, for a family vault in some cemeteries in Sydney. You know, it's extraordinary. Gosh. It's extraordinary.
I'm just curious, and I wrote this question to you ahead of time, so please don't be offended by it, but do people have to use a funeral director, or is there a DIY way of burying somebody or cremating somebody?
We actually do offer a do-it-yourself service, so that
no way, you know, really,
yeah. So what we do is we just set them up, the family up in the system, and they'll get sent a link, and they'll go through and add in all the information for the births, deaths, and marriages, and then they go in and choose all their elements from coffin, flowers, live streaming, all the elements to do it. So there's no sales pitch for anybody to think they're being sold something in this process. And then once they hit submit, that's when we would then give them a call and just say, okay, we've received everything now, and now we need to come together just to sign some documentation, because there is that, you know, there are some people out there that like to upsell a coffin or upsell flowers or upsell whatever it is. To answer your question, no, you don't need a funeral director. If you want to, you know, understand how cremation works, there are some steps that need to take place with a statutory declaration as such. How do you transfer a body? Well, as long as that body is in a body bag and that they get sent to a mortuary as such. But we're lucky in New South Wales that a body can remain at home for up to 5 days after passing. Okay. For people that want to hold vigils and just call in the loved ones and for communities such as Maori, Islanders, New Zealanders, they're all about bringing the loved one home and holding vigils and ceremony and holding the space at home. So there are communities out there that do that and they just manage it themselves. What we do behind the scenes is obviously to have a vehicle such as a hearse, mortuary for preparation of the body, buying the coffin and just getting all those sort of fundamental elements right, booking chapels. But at the end of the day, anybody can do it. You don't need a funeral director in Australia to organise it. So
do you organise the professional wailers as well? I've heard in Maori culture and Islander culture, they have wailers that come along and will do the wailing on behalf of the family grieving at that time. I understand why, but I guess I can't help but have just a slight bit of a giggle about that without being disrespectful, please, to anybody out there. It's just, wow, but that's a cultural thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. The first time I did a Maori one where there was the family were all wailing, like I was just like, I just, it was so emotional. And then all of a sudden she just turned around and start laughing to the friend next to her and then go back into the wailing. And it's just a sign of respect. It's a sign of respect. The louder the wailing, the more wailing there is. It is just a genuine sign of respect for the deceased.
I guess it's one of those funny things though, isn't it, Scott, that this is a journey as human beings, we are all going to have to take one time or another. We're going to have to talk to somebody about our final journey. Hopefully we get to have that discussion and maybe be part of the planning process. Certainly, I'm a bit older now and I guess my discussions with Jonathan, I've been doing some estate planning with my children, but I guess when you have somebody where it's a bit of a shock, do you step in and do a lot of the hand-holding for them because it's just something they weren't experiencing?
Yeah, it's really important to embrace a family, be it the one or the two or the 10 people that are involved in the funeral process and planning of the funeral, that you allow them to make decisions. And we do that by giving them options. Whether it is by the beach, whether it is at a golf club, bowls club, in your backyard, at a crematorium, at a church, whichever. What we do is we just give them the options to say, look, here are five options based on your conversation. And then what we do is we just organise all the elements so that on the day, everything from the coffin being delivered to staff being present, to flowers being ordered, to booklets being done, to music, to live stream, to all the little elements that need to come together very quickly sometimes. And I say very quickly, like within a week sometimes, and to make sure that it's a very smooth ceremony so that, everybody can be present, everybody can have their moments and their loved one that they've just lost is given the most beautiful send-off in any way, shape or form. So
you made mention off air that you also have another company that does LGBTQI style of arrangements as well. Do you want to mention that quickly for the audience as well?
Yeah, so being part of the LGBTI community, it's really one thing that I guess was proven to me that when somebody dies in our community, that there was a lot of prejudice, there was a lot of discrimination, there was a lot of judging by the family members coming towards a funeral director to say that my son, my daughter, my mother, my father, whoever it might be that's in that community, that they couldn't really, express themselves when it comes to death. And quite often people in the LGBTQI community say, oh, just put me in a cardboard box and throw me away. And I'm like, hang on a second, these people are fabulous humans just like everybody else. Why can't we have drag queens, at a funeral? Why can't we have entertainment at a funeral? Why can't we have champagne, oysters? That reflects these people.
I couldn't agree more.
And colour and all that sort of stuff as well. So, it's interesting that I put a rainbow flag on the Sydney funeral website for 2 weeks and the phone didn't ring for 2 weeks. I then took it off, the phone rang. Now, I'm just, you know, I put one and one together and I came up with hopefully two, but, you know, so we then launched Over the Rainbow Funerals, which are, you know, the team is all LGBTQI, from, you know, funeral director, celebrant, staff to mortuary to, you know, everybody that's involved in that, so that when the ceremony happens, that when we're in with the community and the congregation, is that, you know, we know this is going to be a beautiful, heartfelt ceremony. And we did one in a church where we had Madonna's song Vogue being played, and even the priest who was presiding actually got up and started to dance with the mother of the deceased, because he was wonderful. Like, this is what ceremony is about, you know.
So look, we're just about out of time, Scott. One takeaway, if you can leave for our listeners, what's one takeaway that you should, you know, if they take away nothing else, what's the one message I'd give our listeners?
Shop around. If you have that opportunity to shop around, compare prices, meet with a funeral director as well. Don't get signed into anything that you don't feel comfortable with, and get a full itemized quote before making any decision, and making sure that the quote is itemized to, you know, every element, not bundled up in any way, shape or form, and take your time.
So caveat emptor, buyer beware. Okay, so look, thank you for listening to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly program about finance, money and investing on Radio Northern Beaches and nationally on the community radio network around Australia. We welcome questions and feedback, and thank you, Scott, for being on the program today. And hopefully we'll get you back another time. Let's talk about rainbow funerals at another time at length. That'd be great. Thank you so kindly for being on the show.